Getting dinner together on a weeknight can be a tough call sometimes, but if you're a household with two people, you know there aren't always a lot of recipes geared specifically for you. On today's edition of Food Friday, our next guest has rounded up some of the best recipes for a dining duo in the recently released Cook's Illustrated All-Time Best Dinners for Two. Dan Zuccarello is executive food editor for cookbooks at America's Test Kitchen. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's nice to be with you.
Well, you give a lot of advice, a lot of recipes, obviously, but let's start with the advice part and talk about shopping for cooking for two. You have some suggestions that you start off with.
Yeah, you know, shopping, I think, is probably one of the primary problems with when it comes to cooking for two. And really, it comes down to leftovers, right? The grocery stores these days, they're really set up to entice people to buy more. There's a lot of produce and ingredients that are sold in bulk. And so for someone who's cooking for two, you're kind of presented with this problem of what do I do with all the leftovers, right? And so we really kind of get the book started by talking about what can you do to avoid the leftovers. Kind of big picture things, we tell people, first of all, get creative in the produce section. There's often an organic vegetable section in most grocery stores these days. And the nice thing about that section is that they often have their vegetables sold loose. So if you need one carrot, it's right there for you. The other, opportunity is farmers markets. A lot of times farmers markets provide the opportunity to kind of pick and choose what you need as you need it. Another way to really kind of avoid leftovers is, get friendly with your salad bar. most grocery stores have a salad bar, and, it's kind of an ideal place to grab the cherry tomatoes that you need for the recipe you're cooking or the shredded cheese that you need in a quick and easy way and not have to buy, a big batch of ingredients. And one other, idea when it comes to buying protein in particular is the butcher section. Instead of simply, going to the meat section and buying maybe a prepackaged pound of ground beef, try going to the butcher counter, and in most cases, you're able to get exactly the amount that you need. It might be a little bit more expensive, but we've found that the small difference in price at the butcher counter will definitely overall save you some money because you'll be buying exactly what you need and not wasting it.
Now let's take a step back. At America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Illustrated, you've worked with a lot of recipes over the years. Why did you see a need to have this one focused on cooking for two?
Yeah, we're noticing a larger demographic of people either living by themselves or with one other person. You think about, typical college students. They might be living on their own or with a roommate, young couples who are just getting started off, who don't have children, or maybe it's parents whose children have kind of moved on to school, or they're towards retirement age. Maybe they're living by themselves. There's a wide range of people who find themselves in the situation where cooking for two, maybe even just cooking for one, but just want a little bit of leftovers. They find themselves in that situation.
And it seems like you could just say, okay, let's just take the recipe for four and divide by two. But when I look at recipes, sometimes it's like, well, what's a half of three eggs? What's that half an egg? Like, is there a problem sometimes in that conversion of a larger recipe?
Well, that's exactly it. I think, ideally cooking for two would be just cooking by half, but unfortunately it's not really that simple. And so we've spent a lot of time looking at each of the recipes that we've incorporated into the book. And in some cases it is, more straightforward, but like you mentioned, sometimes it's not as easy and you really need to kind of re-engineer the recipe to work when you want to serve two. And I think the other big thing is, people still want to eat well, even though they're cooking for less. And so with the book, it was really a focus on high-quality recipes that are interesting, that are delicious, are creative. And so that takes some energy as far as tailoring them to be for two people.
Talking to Dan Zuccarello. He's with America's Test Kitchen. We're talking about the new book, The Cook's Illustrated All-Time Best Dinners for two. And let's get into some recipes now, Dan. You have shared some with us, and we have them up at WPR.org/Food Friday. Three recipes for two, actually. And this one is really interesting to me. It's a weeknight beef stew. And usually you think, okay, I'm making a stew. Maybe it's in the crock pot or it's simmering for a long time. This one comes together in an hour. How do you mad scientists at the test kitchen make that work?
Yeah, so I love this recipe. One, you mentioned exactly the biggest sell point is that it doesn't take very long to do. But I think it also highlights kind of one of the ways that when you're cooking for two, you got to get kind of creative. And I think the first thing that you'll notice with this recipe is most beef stews start with chuck roast. It's a common cut at the butcher counter. It's tough. You know, it takes a while to cook, but when you cook it for a long period of time, it gets super, super tender, really delicious. Problem is, it takes a long time to cook, and second, most of the time you can't get a small enough portion to cook for two people, so you're left with a lot of leftover meat. So the first question that we had to answer is, how do we make a beef stew and get the right amount of beef for two people? And the answer came to sirloin steak tips. It's a cut from the sirloin, which is, you know, towards the back end of the cow, so it still is, you know, on the tougher side, still has a lot of flavor, and the great thing is you can buy just the amount that you need. I actually really love steak tips on the grill. It's a really great cut just in general. It's really delicious. But we start with the steak tips. We cut them into slightly smaller pieces than you would expect for a beef stew to help the cooking go a little bit faster. But the really interesting thing is because they don't need to cook as long as traditional chuck, what we do is sear the meat at the beginning of the recipe, set it aside, build the base of the stew, traditional ingredients, potatoes, carrots, peas, a really delicious gravy, and then right before serving, stir the brown beef back into the mixture, and then you have your beef stew. And it's, like you said, done in an hour. You know, can't beat that.
Did I see a special guest star in anchovy in this?
Yeah, so this is something kind of a test kitchen tip that we like to incorporate. Many people have heard of one of the flavor the senses, umami, right? And anchovy is really high in umami, tomato paste, soy sauce. And so it's a common ingredient that we incorporate into some of our richer dishes. And you might see it and be turned off, you know, what's fish doing in my beef stew? But the truth is, you don't notice the flavor at all, but it does add some really great meaty notes to the beef stew. And especially for a recipe that's cooking so quickly, that little bit really helps.
That is a recipe for weeknight beef stew. It's up on WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll come back, Dan, to a couple other recipes you shared with us. But I want to get to, you've got a page or two devoted to gear, equipment that we want to have around. A lot of it's stuff that most people have around for cooking for any number. This, I got to get some of these. I never know how to say them. Ramekins? Is that right? Ramekins?
Yep, ramekins.
These little single serving, ceramic things. Talk about those and why they're handy for cooking for two or one, I guess, in particular.
Yeah, so this is kind of like our, I think a lot about casseroles. So when you're cooking for a large group of people, you're typically using, a square casserole dish or a rectangular casserole dish. But when it comes to cooking for two, all of a sudden now that's way too big for you. And so what do you do when you want to make a simple casserole? I'm thinking of chicken pot pie as a great example. How do you make chicken pot pie when it's typically in a casserole dish? And the answer is, you need to look for a smaller casserole dish. And the best solution that we found was a ramekin. It's something that a lot of people have in their house. If you've made chocolate souffle or creme brulee before, you probably have some ramekins. They're definitely widely available either online or at your local, kitchen supply store. And it's a great dish to have because it's oven safe. It's insulated, so it does kind of a similar job to a casserole dish. And now all of a sudden, you can make these casseroles that you really love.
We're talking to Dan Zuccarello, executive food editor for cookbooks at America's Test Kitchen. He's with us to share some of Cook's Illustrated all-time best dinners when you're cooking for two. Their new cookbook is called Dinners for Two. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you cooking for two people? What recipes do you like when you're cooking for a pair? Do you have tips for scaling down a bigger recipe or for shopping at a grocery store? Are you an empty nester used to cooking for kids, now you're cooking for two? Or do you have a big family but you only like one of them? You know, you're just cooking for two anyway. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation about what to make for dinner when there are exactly two at the table. Dan Zuccarello is with us from America's Test Kitchen. He's got recipes from the Cook's Illustrated All-Time Best Dinners for Two. You can join in for 800-642-1234. Is this your story? You're always cooking for two. What kind of solutions have you come up with? What are some of your favorite recipes? Do you have suggestions on how you've scaled down recipes or, you know, learned to work with leftovers better? Or do you have questions for Dan about what to do when you're cooking for two? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Remember, we've got a few recipes from Dan at WPR.org/Food Friday. To your calls now, Pam is with us in Madison. Pam, hi there.
Hi. In my experience, the first thing you need to do is downsize your cookware. So you've got a 10-inch skillet and a 1-quart saucepan, and you're not cooking for what the pan will hold. You're automatically shifting your mindset. And like an 8x6 glassware Pyrex thing is good for baking in instead of the 9x13 that you're accustomed to.
Got it. Pam, thanks a lot. Dan, and that's some of your suggestions in gear, having some of that smaller cookware handy.
Well, she has it exactly right. I mean, I would say, you know, a great example is a skillet. Everybody needs a great skillet in their kitchen. And, you know, one of the challenges that, as the caller mentioned, you know, if a traditional skillet is 12 inches, and the problem when you're cooking for two is that with the extra surface area in the skillet, when you're cooking less, all of a sudden now your sauces start to reduce too much. You could have some scorching if you're trying to brown something. And so really what you're looking for is a smaller skillet. 10-inch skillet is great. An 8-inch skillet for certain, you know, applications. You definitely need to think about ways to kind of minimize the size of some of the things that you're using when you're cooking, because, again, when you're cooking less, it definitely impacts the recipe.
Pam, thanks a lot for calling in. We'll go now to Mark with us in Three Lakes. Mark, hi.
Hi. Thank you for the show. I'm a bachelor. I have been for over 11 years. I buy family packs and repackage them and then freeze them or can them in order to make a 2-serving size. And then I have what I ate for dinner yesterday, I have for lunch today, which saves a lot of time.
Mark, thanks a lot for sharing that story. By the way, we had a cooking for one segment not that long ago. I don't know if there's a cooking for three, if we're going to continue this trend, but you can check that out at WPR.org, Mark. And Dan, that same principle can apply. Okay, you can buy the smaller amount, or if you're going to buy the bigger stuff, have a plan going in like Mark did.
Exactly. And the other thing I like to do when I'm thinking of ways to use up extra ingredients, you know, sometimes, like I mentioned, you know, you want to try to buy just the right amount, but sometimes you don't have a choice. I'm thinking of things at the grocery store like celery, cauliflower, cabbage, those vegetables that you get stuck buying the whole head, right? And so now what do you do when you don't want to make all of that cauliflower for two people? And so you really need to start thinking creatively, what can I do with the other half or quarter of the vegetable? And so, you know, what I like to do is say, you know, for cauliflower, you know, I use half of it if I'm going to roast it for, you know, dinner one night, and then I say, well, I don't want to eat the same type of cauliflower the next night, what can I do? Cauliflower, if you put it into a soup, makes a really great soup. You can cook it down with a little bit of broth and puree it, and now you have a really creamy cauliflower soup. You can actually process the cauliflower in your food processor and then just quickly cook it in a skillet with a little bit of butter or olive oil. It makes a really great alternative to rice. And you can season it with all kinds of spices. So things like that, really kind of thinking, okay, if I'm stuck with some extra ingredients, sure, I can freeze it or keep it in my refrigerator and use it again. But trying to get creative and say, okay, well, I have this. What can I do that's new and interesting and delicious?
Mark, thanks a lot for the suggestions. We'll go now to Gwen with us in Madison. Hi, Gwen.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to mention that people shouldn't overlook home pressure canning. I'm by myself now. My kids are grown and gone, and I never thought I would can. My family never canned. My mother didn't can. I didn't know how. But if you get a big portion of meat on sale, like a whole piece of pork tenderloin or something, you can cut it up and put it in small jars that are, you know, one or two servings, and home can it. And then when you are hungry and you want something, you can just open it up. It's shelf stable for at least 5 years. It's already cooked. There's no dishes to wash, and you know,
so
you
this
can
is
you make soups that way or stews with vegetables.
So you cook the pork, Gwen, and then can it? Do I have this right?
Well, some of the foods are pre-cooked, but according to the National Center for Food Preservation, you can raw pack meats as well.
Oh, okay.
But it has to be pressure canned, not pressure cooked, pressure canned. And you can make some wonderful recipes and have them available just by opening a jar. And so even though you had to buy a larger portion or wanted to buy a larger portion because it was on sale and the price was good, you don't have to eat it right away. You don't have to worry about it getting freezer burned.
Gotcha. Gwen, thanks a lot for calling in. Dan, I don't know if you get into cooking in the cookbook at all, but not bad ideas there.
You know, I pressure canning is a really interesting idea. I think it really goes to this idea of what do you do with what you have left over. And I think, like you said, storing it, you have to be really smart, being creative, making sure you're freezing things rightly, packing them really tightly so that you don't get a lot of air. I actually really enjoy, I find vacuum sealing really useful when you're trying to store something because it really ensures longevity in storage. You know, getting really good storage containers for your refrigerator. It definitely plays a part in kind of planning when you're cooking for two because, again, sometimes you just find yourself in these situations where the best planning still leaves you with leftovers.
Thanks a lot for the call, Gwen. We are talking to Dan Zuccarello with America's Test Kitchen looking at the new cookbook, Dinners for Two. Dan, you shared a few recipes. We talked about that weeknight beef stew earlier. This one looks good. A Parmesan and basil stuffed chicken with roasted carrots. We have this at WPR.org/Food Friday. I hear stuffing chicken. I hear complicated. You found a way to make it a little easier. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, I think the big thing that really won me over with this recipe is the no mess that it leaves behind. I think when you're cooking for two, the other thing that you are trying to avoid is cleanup. You know, for some reason, when you're cooking for a large group of people, you know, all those dishes somehow seem, you know, less problematic. But when you're cooking for two and you have the same amount of dishes left over, all of a sudden you're like, this is too much. And so one of the options that you could kind of, you know, incorporate into your cooking is this idea of sheet pan cooking. You know, everyone has a sheet pan. It's a great vessel for cooking, you know, roasting on, cooking your vegetables. And so what we did here is kind of took that idea and incorporated kind of the classic dinner, right? Roasted chicken and carrots. And to kind of spice things up a little bit, we just made a really easy combination of cream cheese, Parmesan, some fresh basil, mixed it all together. And instead of kind of getting into a complicated technique of, you know, creating this stuffed chicken breast, all we did is really, you know, loosen the skin over the chicken breast and kind of use that as a little pocket to hold the filling. And then the chicken goes on one end of the sheet pan, the carrots go on the other, both go into the oven at the same time. And the great thing is at the end of the day, all you have to do is throw away the foil that you line the sheet pan with and, you know, wash some dishes.
Sounds fantastic. And yeah, I like that idea of keeping the cleanup simple. Now, I have a challenge for you, Dan. Our producer, Rachel Vasquez, made a recipe from the book, the classic lasagna recipe, but she had to buy a bigger container of ricotta cheese. So she's got this leftover ricotta. With what you were talking about earlier, finding creative ways to use the extra stuff. Any thoughts on what to do with that ricotta?
Yeah, so my first thought is making a dip. I think ricotta actually makes a really great dip. You can just simply add some olive oil, some fresh herbs, and you've got yourself a dip. It also makes a really good filling for dessert. You can actually just make a really great ricotta cheese dip that's sweet. You think of cannoli. Ricotta is a kind of classic component to that, and so you could do kind of like an unfilled cannoli style. You can buy some cookies and just sweeten the ricotta with a little bit of confectioner sugar, some vanilla, and you've got yourself a little dip. Those are two really great ideas. It's really great just stirred right into your pasta if you want to do a creamy tomato sauce, things like that.
All right, great suggestions there. And Dan, quick pep talk. If we're thinking, oh, if I'm only cooking for two, I don't have the whole crew around, it's not worth it. I'll just order in. Give us a pep talk to cook something more creative.
Well, I think that, again, it's this idea that cooking for two doesn't have to be boring. You can still have really great dinners, some really interesting foods, and not fill your kitchen sink with dirty dishes, not fill your refrigerator and freezer with waste. It's definitely doable. We kind of spell it out in the book, like you mentioned. There's plenty of options, from chicken to pork to beef to seafood. We've kind of given you all of those options. It's a really great kind of compilation of recipes that you're going to want to eat.
Dan, it's been fun. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Dan Zuccarello, executive food editor for Cookbooks at America's Test Kitchen. He was with us on this edition of Food Friday to talk about their new cookbook, The Cook's Illustrated All-Time Best Dinners for Two. You can find actually three recipes. We only talked about two of them. They're at WPR.org/Food Friday. We heard about the weeknight beef stew, a beef stew that comes together in an hour, that Parmesan and basil stuffed chicken with roasted carrots, and bonus recipe, Singapore noodles with shrimp. Check them out, make them, and you could also share your tips, your advice for cooking for two on the Ideas Network Facebook page.